Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. The U.S. military confirming Saturday that overnight joint counter-Taliban operations in southern Afghanistan have killed and wounded Afghan security forces but gave no casualty toll. The confirmation followed local media reports that said airstrikes conducted late Friday in the insurgent-held Nad Ali district of Helmand province killed at least 8 local forces and wounded many more. Helmand is Afghanistan's largest province, and most of it under the control or influence of the Taliban. After this week's general election, which saw the ruling Conservative Party's majority diminish in Britain, Prime Minister Theresa May announced she would try to form a minority government supported by the Democratic Unionist Party of Northern Ireland.
Our two parties have enjoyed a strong relationship over many years, and this gives me the confidence to believe that we will be able to work together in the interests of the whole United Kingdom.
The Labour opposition, which defied polls and predictions, gaining 29 seats to the dismay of Prime Minister May, hear now from some voters in London.
I very much believe that if you get this country into that kind of situation, that you should be at least willing to stick it out. Not to say that I think she's the best choice for the country, but I would lose a lot of respect for her as the Prime Minister if she was to resign, obviously.
And in some ways, a hung Parliament and people having to work together might actually get us a better result, having with people having to work together.
Meantime, some observers are saying Theresa May's time in office as Prime Minister is limited, and another election is likely in the not-too-distant future. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. President Trump has responded to comments made by James Comey, the former director of the FBI, who was fired by Mr. Trump. VOA's Jim Malone has more.
At the White House with the president of Romania, a defiant Donald Trump responded to the swirl of allegations stemming from James Comey's testimony the day before.
No collusion, no obstruction. He's a leaker, but we want to get back to running our great country.
Trump denied Comey's assertion that he'd asked the former FBI director to drop the investigation into former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, adding he'd be willing to testify under oath.
I will tell you, I didn't say that. And there'd be nothing wrong if I did say it, according to everybody that I've read today, but I did not say that.
Trump also said he would provide information soon on whether there are White House tape recordings of his meetings with Comey.
VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Brazil's electoral court has voted against stripping President Michel Temer of his office despite a growing corruption scandal and a single-digit popularity. Michael Mohalem is a law professor and political scientist at Vargas University.
Despite the fact that politically he will gain some space, he will be strong for a certain moment, we cannot affirm that will last very long.
Temer has denied any wrongdoing and vowed to stay in office. The U.S. Embassy confirmed Saturday that American forces are providing technical support to the Philippine military battling to crush Islamist militants in a southern city, as 13 Philippine Marines were killed in intense urban fighting. A Philippine military spokesman spoke about the significance of having U.S. support.
The presence of the U.S. counterparts facilitate the exchanges of intelligence, facilitate subject matter experts exchange, and also provides training exchanges, and of course the technical support that we are sharing together in the fight of global terrorism.
The cooperation between the longtime allies is significant because President Rodrigo Duterte has taken a hostile stance toward Washington, vowing to eject U.S. military trainers and advisors from his country. And a gay pride event, several of them taking place worldwide this weekend, including here in Washington, with the Capitol Pride Parade taking place today, followed by a large-scale equality march Sunday, with organizers saying they want to combat anti-LGBT rhetoric here in the U.S. I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
The people of Lesotho have opted for change to a situation that is more oriented towards a peaceful and stable government.
Al Basotho Congress, or ABC, is set to choose Tom Tabani as the new prime minister in the Kingdom of Lesotho.
There's an extensive record of atrocities and crimes against humanity that have been committed. But over the past 15 years, I've been supporting the rule of law and certainly retributive justice.
A former Liberian warlord turned senator is under investigation for war crimes during the country's 14-year civil war.
We are still waiting on the official declaration by the church or the state, to confirm what rumors are giving us.
And the death of a popular Cameroonian Catholic priest is ruled a murder following autopsy reports. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The leader of the Al Basotho Congress, or ABC, Tom Tabani, is set to return to power as the next prime minister in the Kingdom of Lesotho. The opposition ABC defeated former Prime Minister Pakadita Musisidi's ruling coalition in the June 3 elections, this following the party's strong showing in last week's poll. The former prime minister lost a vote of no confidence after parliamentarians from his ruling coalition defected to the opposition. I read Tom Tabani, the incoming prime minister, and asked him what his party's election victory means for the people of Lesotho.
It means that the people of Lesotho have opted for change to a situation that is more oriented towards a peaceful and stable government. Also for a situation where the economy will be the number one priority of government. The second priority, which is very important in Lesotho at the time, is to level off the security situation and bring the security organs in Lesotho, army, police, and so on, to be directly under control of a civilian elected government, which is one of the most important domestic norms that control a democratic state. The third one is, of course, to improve the general health of the people, see that children go to school.
Do you think the people have given you the mandate to carry out the security sector reforms that you promised? Because you initially had problems with them while you were prime minister.
Certainly, I have that mandate. And I boldly will carry it out because it is the correct thing to do. And also, I think that the level of support which you yourself are witnessing from the people themselves, for that to happen, it would be actually be completely remiss of me if I didn't follow through with the security sector reform. We need to put more emphasis on policing.
You are expected to become the next prime minister next week. What should the people of Lesotho expect? What should they expect?
First, they must be assured of peace and personal security, both for women and children and for the population at large. Secondly, we must find ways to improve very quickly the partnership that we had in the past with the farmers so that food production is raised to a very high level. The health service in Lesotho is at the moment not in the best of order.
Tom Tabani is the leader of the All Basotho Congress, or ABC, of the Kingdom of Lesotho. He spoke with me from the capital, Maseru. Reports say a former Liberian warlord turned senator is under investigation for war crimes allegedly committed during the country's 14-year civil war. Senator Prince Johnson, who was leader of the rebel Independent National Patriotic Front of Liberia during the war, is also alleged to have murdered American Ladini Devi Dasi. But the senator blames opponents for trying to topple his presidential ambitions in the upcoming October elections with the report of the inquiry. But Dr. Alan White, who played a key role in gathering evidence against former Liberian President Charles Taylor, told me there's need for retributive justice for the victims of the Liberian Civil War.
Well, certainly if the investigation proves that this occurred, that would no doubt have an impact on this. One of the things that I did want to mention on this is not something that's new. This is there's an extensive record of atrocities and crimes against humanity that have been committed. But over the past 15 years, I've been supporting the rule of law and certainly retributive justice, specifically in West Africa. And it's time the people of Liberia obtain retributive justice. There have been some long efforts. It took us a long time to get Charles Taylor, who was involved not only in Liberia, but principally in Sierra Leone at the time, as well as others. And it's been a long journey, and we hope that some of the African countries, and in this case even particularly Liberia, will step up and mete out justice through their criminal justice system. But it's been 15 years, and we've been slowly but surely pursuing justice against the people that were involved.
Some of his critics say he has been allowed to get away with some of the atrocities he committed during the Liberian Civil War for a long time, and it's about time he faced some justice. Do you share that sentiment?
I do, and I share it, again, from somebody that's been pursuing justice in that part of the world for 15 years. And there are many others that were involved in these significant atrocities and crimes against humanity, murder, extortion, rape, torture. Those types of crimes are very egregious, and certainly people should be held accountable.
Well, he says he's a changed man. He's now a pastor. He's religious. He's pious. And that some of the things he did, he should not be accused of them anymore because he's repented. Do you share that sentiment?
Well, that's convenient to say, but for the victims that never were afforded justice, which is what they want, those are all factors that can be considered during the sentencing phase. But it doesn't change the fact that you committed those crimes. And for the victims, who I'm always pursuing justice for the victims, this is one particular individual that has a storied past, and the recent revelations and witnesses that are coming forward that had an eyewitness account, allegedly, of him executing an unarmed American, is just an unthinkable crime. Again, not only as an American, but also for the Liberians. And the historic past that we have, we couldn't tolerate this. So we'll let justice play out, see where it goes. But certainly I am in favor of anyone that's committed these types of crimes to be held accountable.
Recently, Prince Johnson blames President Trump and another presidential candidate, Yuri, of being behind the investigation against the alleged murder of an American citizen. What are your thoughts?
Well, President Trump and Mr. Yuri did not kill anybody. And the evidence that I know that is surfacing did not come from them. It came from Liberians who have enough is enough, and they would like to see justice, especially with the recent revelation of Gus Kouwenhoven, who is a Dutch citizen that was involved in arms trafficking and fueling the civil war in Liberia and Sierra Leone, recently got 19 years. Mm-hmm. I was actively involved in that case. Agnes Reeves, and there are other international jurisdictions that are looking at that are other people. So if Liberia can't do it, there are other mechanisms to make sure that justice is brought to the victims.
Well, Prince Johnson has paraded himself in the past and probably in next year's election as a kingmaker in Liberia's elections. Will this investigation dim his future prospects since he appears to be popular in his county, where Nimba County?
Well, You know, the Liberian voters will have to make that decision whether he is or not. But this has been a long process in pursuing justice for all the victims in Liberia. And these are allegations that aren't new to people, except for the fact that there was some thought that Linda Jury may have been someone other than American, but in fact she was. And people have just had enough, and they're willing to come forward and provide testimony as to the crimes that were committed. And certainly that will have an impact if, in fact, this is true.
Dr. Alan White played a key role in gathering evidence against former Liberian President Charles Taylor. He spoke with me from here in the VOA studios in Washington, D.C. The Cameroonian Catholic News Agency says autopsy reports have confirmed that 58-year-old Bishop Jean-Marie Benoit Bala was a victim of murder, not suicide. The popular Catholic bishop's body was discovered in a river near the capital Yaoundé on June 2nd after he disappeared on the night of May 30. Meanwhile, Cameroonian authorities say they have launched an inquiry into the death of the Catholic bishop. This after church members demanded to know what happened to Bishop Bala following initial reports that he had committed suicide. Catechist Dominique Morfo at the Communication Service at Diocese of Yaoundé told me the church was skeptical about the initial reports of suicide.
We are still waiting on the official declaration by the church or the state, to confirm what rumors are giving us.
How did you learn of the disappearance of Bishop Jean-Marie Benoit Bala?
Well, we first learned it from the social media, because when people got it, they started calling us to know whether it is true. And we also said we just got the message as they did. And so the people started investigation to see whether it was true. And finally, we got that it was true. And over the time, we were waiting to be able to see. They were looking for the corpse. And finally, they saw it. And what the social media was giving us, they were giving some of the facts that were true, and there were some exaggerations and so on. And then up to today, we are still waiting for the official declaration of the church to be able to say this is the circumstances through which he died.
Initial report said the Catholic bishop had committed suicide. Cameroonians were skeptical about it. What did you find?
Yes. Well, from the very beginning when we heard about that, I would say, from my very impression, I knew it couldn't be true. And I think about 75% of Christians or even non-Christians knew that that was not the true information, that there was something hidden behind it. And finally, maybe that will be proven true, that sincerely speaking, he was not suicide, but it was a kind of trick. It was a murder. But how he was murdered, the circumstances is what we are still waiting for.
Have police officials contacted you to talk about the investigation that is underway concerning the alleged murder of Bishop Jean-Marie Benoit Bala?
I understand that the Procureur General of Yaoundé has been officially declared the official investigator. And I think the other day I overheard that even in the seminary where the other priest was found dead and all over the place, many people have been called to question and there are a lot of investigations. But the official conclusion to all what they are investigating has not been made clear.
So what are you telling all these congregants of the church concerning the suspicion surrounding the death of the bishop?
Well, we have told them to be able to develop a spirit of discernment. Because there are a lot of information from left and right, and that they should try to discern and wait, have a spirit of understanding and to wait so that officially the church will make clear what they can take home. For now, they should actually digest all what is being given to them with a lot of serenity, with a lot of wisdom, in order not to be led astray, because, for example, the information came was suicide, now it's murder, and so what are people going to believe? They have to wait for a real official statement that will make them to be able to, not to doubt what they are believing, to be sure that this is exactly what is happening.
When do you expect an official declaration from the Catholic Church concerning the death of the bishop?
I think before his burial, which is already been prepared by there is some groundwork preparation, but I really believe that before the burial, the official declaration will be made. Now, the bishops have even issued a communique to ask Christians to pray, to remain in prayer, and to continue to pray to when they will be able to give a clarification. And even then, they still have to continue to pray.
That's catechist Dominique Morfo at the Communication Service Archdiocese. He spoke with me from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé. The United States has committed over $1 billion for famine relief caused by the conflict in South Sudan. But at least one U.S. lawmaker says more money is needed. After returning from a recent visit to South Sudan, U.S. Democratic Congresswoman Karen Bass of California tells reporter Ian Buer that South Sudan needs the support of the international community to ensure that lives are saved.
This was my third visit to South Sudan, and my specific reason for going this time was related to the famine that is taking place, or potentially taking place, over four countries in the continent. However, South Sudan, out of the four, is the only country where famine has actually been declared.
You said your recent trip was extremely educational. What did you learn while you were in South Sudan last week?
Well, most important is how dire the situation is. And I also visited Uganda, and I went to Uganda in order to visit the refugee camps in northern Uganda, which are composed of people from South Sudan. And then when I was in South Sudan, I went up to northern South Sudan to Bentu, the town of Bentu, to see the internally displaced persons camp as well. You know, from the United States, you're born and raised in the United States, it's very difficult to even imagine what it is like to have hundreds of thousands of people that literally pick up and walk to another country and then are displaced. So it's very important, while I work on legislation here, that I have a firsthand knowledge and experience of seeing what the situation is. Now, 2 weeks before I went on the trip, we just approved over $990 million to address the famine. And I it was too soon for that money to actually hit the ground. But I wanted to see whether or not that money was going to make a difference and what else was needed. The United Nations is saying $6 billion is required to address famine in the four countries. So given that the United States has made its contribution, our next step is to meet with embassies from other countries to ask them to also step up, so that we can raise the $6 billion that is needed to address famine.
A key figure for Sudan and South Sudan is a special envoy, and that a special envoy's position has been vacant since January, since Donald Booth left. Is the absence of a special envoy impacting our ability to engage with the region?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We need to have a special envoy, but I do have to tell you, even before you get to a special envoy, how about having an assistant secretary for Africa? I mean, the problem right now in the administration, as you know, is that there are many, many key positions that are not filled yet and where people have not even been proposed. Now, it's not that they're being held up in terms of confirmation. They haven't even been proposed. So to not have an assistant secretary functioning under the Secretary of State is the first step, and then the second step would be a special envoy. To have a special envoy without an assistant secretary is a challenge as well.
I understand that you spoke directly with President Kiir. Could you tell me about that meeting? Did he strike you as a president who is doing everything in his power to stop the suffering of his people?
Well, he struck me as a president who is in the middle of a conflict and who is, you know, making efforts to address the conflict, whether the efforts are comprehensive, whether it's enough. I think, you know, one has to raise those questions. But, you know, we did have a meeting with him, and our focus was on addressing the situation and the immediate situation of the famine. I think it's very important that we get to addressing the root causes, and the root causes of the famine is the conflict. But our focus in speaking with the president was not the root causes, it was the immediate crisis.
And Uganda has been influential in the matters of South Sudan, not just in hosting hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese refugees, but also in their political influence among the leaders of South Sudan. I understand from your press release that you spoke directly with Uganda's President Museveni. Tell me a little bit about that conversation.
Karen Baz is a Democratic U.S. Congresswoman. She spoke with reporter Ian Buer from her office in Washington. The International Organization for Migration is appealing for a $60 million to provide life-saving assistance to millions of victims of the worst drought to hit East Africa in decades. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
An estimated 16 million people in Somalia, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Djibouti are affected by drought. The appeal by the International Organization for Migration aims to provide emergency and early recovery aid to 6 million people through the end of the year. The Horn of Africa is suffering severe food and water shortages brought on by two previous years of drought exacerbated by the El Niño phenomenon. A recent sprinkling of rain is bringing some relief to the region, but the IOM Regional Director for Eastern Horn of Africa, Jeffrey Labovitz, says the rain has come too late and is not abundant enough to reach the level needed to mitigate the vulnerable condition of millions of people.
We're happy that rains are happening, but it doesn't mean that the needs are fully addressed. And in fact, there's a lot of consideration that we'll have to look at a much longer term of urgent humanitarian assistance.
The IOM reports more than 1 million people within Somalia, Ethiopia, and Kenya have become internally displaced over the past 6 months because of severe drought conditions. Labovitz tells VOA warnings of famine so far have not materialized because of timely interventions by aid agencies. But he notes the crisis is far from over.
In fact, we're adding millions of people in need of humanitarian assistance over the course of the last month. When we're talking about Ethiopia, it's a rapid increase. I mean, the last figure we heard was 5.6 million people in need of humanitarian assistance about a month ago. Now it's 7.8. You just added almost 2 million people. And we think it's going to go much higher than that.
Labovitz notes between 50,000 and 100,000 people in Somalia leave their homes every week in search of drought relief. He adds drought victims in the Horn of Africa are far from being out of danger. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A young Botswana-based Zimbabwean businessman, Herbert Naidganje, has been named among Africa's 30 most promising young entrepreneurs for 2017 by Forbes Africa magazine. He says it's been a tough ride to the top after he dropped out of school at the age of 17 and had to spend a year sleeping in a small makeshift convenience store in neighboring Botswana. For VOA reporter Martin Ngwenya has more from the Botswana capital, Habaroni.
Herbert Naidganje is the founder of H&G Advertising Agency based in Botswana. It has operations in 13 African countries and handles clients like Unilever, Coca-Cola and other international corporations. The name H&G is derived from his initials for his own name. He says the company covers digital marketing and helps media houses purchase advertising space from print to electronic, as well as billboard advertising. He says recognition from Forbes Africa magazine as one of the top 30 promising young entrepreneurs was both a surprise and humbling. Now, the Harare-born Ganja's goal is to grow H&G Advertising into the biggest advertising agency in Africa and compete globally.
You know, in my office, they call me Billy, shortcut for billionaire. But it's no longer about money. We want to grow our business and grow our team. We want to make sure that we become the biggest advertising agency in Africa.
Ganje grew up in Harare's Waterfall suburb, attending Frank Johnson Primary School before proceeding to Lord Malvern High School in the capital for his secondary education. But he only lasted one term in Form 1 and dropped out in 2004, adding that he was never one of the bright students.
I always found school very boring, you know, and I was never really good at school, you know. So I made a deal with my mom that I would take 1 year off and travel. A friend of mine invited me to Botswana.
Once there, he took several odd jobs to save money to register a business.
When I came to Botswana, I was staying in a tuck shop where there was just a mattress there and a blanket, and that's how I survived. But the whole time I was just focused on my goal, and my goal was to set up a company.
He said despite his limited education, he was confident he could succeed.
I'm a keen reader, so even though I did not finish school, I know a lot about our business. I know our business inside out, you know. So I can be our accountant. I can run any position in our business.
Kanje is also persuasive and found that it was not hard for him to find people interested in doing business. He got his first client even before he registered his company after making a small presentation, and the client was impressed. The 29-year-old businessman encourages the youth to follow their passion and says he will start through his Facebook page mentoring upcoming entrepreneurs. Kanje still frequently visits Zimbabwe and is keen to give back to his Waterfalls community. He promised his mother that one day he would go back to school, but that may not be anytime soon. For now, he's too busy running a company worth millions of dollars. Reporting for VOA's English to Africa service, this is Martin Ngwenya in Havoron, Botswana.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Make we scatter this place tonight. Dance our sweat till life's in a fight. We must settle this thing tonight. Yeah. Come, let us catch some feelings for night. Yeah. And if you tell me, say, make a of you, where I get to go from.
Something they do me.
for body, oh, all over, all over. I make you make me spend this money, oh, all over, all over.
What? Atukula we tuku tuku.
Chino china bo.
Atukula we tuku tuku.
And a bitch.
Atukula we tuku tuku.
A fit for bien kakawa koshiba.
Tienes.
Oh no, mwane ngeri janyiri nanze tanganyana kutemia. Nze stani tonkema. Nze mvako tonkema.
Girl, when me open me eyes, now you love me this season. Now me and you, the ghost.
Me and you, the ghost. Me and you, the ghost.
Mkwatako, anokoze nyambako, kolono zefirako, kabibebe zebonyome zako. Mkwatako, bie bie sutako, togenda kumako, lero tovako.
Yeah, you know, say my love, love, shabba, say my love, love, shabba, me shabba.
No issues with you, my heart is begging and for you. Yeah, no me torture you, I me sweat to you, I sweat to you. I got no issues with you, my heart is begging and for you. Yeah, no me torture you, I me sweat to you, I sweat to you.
Yeah, when me open me eyes, now you love me this season. Now me and you the ghost, me and you the ghost, me and you the ghost.
Mkwatako. Hano kose nyambako, kolono zefirako, kabibebeze bonyome zako. Mkwatako, bie bie sutako, togenda kumako, lero tovako. Mkwatako, hano kose nyambako, kolono zefirako, kabibebeze bonyome zako.
Brain on the mix.
If you get money, make you celebrate, make your people jolly. If you like, you pick a date. Life play, life play. I chico they don't blue. The boys ba ba ba. Shake your booty.
See her name na Fiona. She a very fine girl, but you know that she know nice. Oh Lord, alcohol and cigarettes. A very sharp boy, me a pull up on a figure eight.
Can any lady judge you over? Maka the youngest one to be me, hey. And the girls I want to please me, hey. Even for my shows, man, they be like movie, hey. They say I'm wrong, guess what I'm proving, hey. I'm not too to make it a hot and in a hazard. Now I'm gonna happen in a form of an alomaka. For this number, like I'm more than a talaka. But if you want talking money, move a figure.
Now we activate the money. When we're balling into the 40, some the MD hating on we. Oh, nada, oh, nada. We activate the money. When we're balling into the 40, some the MD hating on we. Should the boy you done the hammer, and the girls they just the holla, and the money done the yakba. It as I get you hot the temper, we shot in Uganda, then we get up to California. The girls them just the maga, bad man ain't nobody badder. Now we activate the money, when we ballin' under the 40, some the MD hit.
activating on we.
Oh nada,
oh nada.
We activating money.
When we're ballin', you know the funny.
Some the ain't be hating on we.
Oh nada,
oh nada.
Who set ya? 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 Who set ya?
Ha, yeah, when they watch ya, yeah. I ain't the no more, so I have lost ya. Yeah. Mandy mama run as a lunch, yeah. Makana mo is a few how I rush, yeah. Go on them to go see for us, yeah. Who again big up when I lost, so I brought baba, my number's a boss, so and then again that money was a must to be a boss, man, I put up a cost, yeah. And then my number gets a hack and embossed us, huh? Before I never let you go in the flop, but I'm going high, my nigga, I'll never drop, huh? Huh? I know top of you, God. See, anywhere I go, I thank God. Makani boy, I go in little Ford, ha, oh, no, we get one. Go
more. Now we activate money.
Yeah,
when we're ballin', you know the funny. Some the envy hating on we.
Oh nada,
oh nada.
We activate money.
When we're ballin', you know the funny.
Some the envy hating on we.
Oh nada,
oh nada.
Who set ya? 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 Who set ya?
Baby Tetorana, now let me talk to you, sit down. Bambi Tetoyomba, when you know me to get in a ton of muscle. Be straight to I and I to get in my muscle. Why you cool at me like that? My talent and I'm gusto. So, when me open me eyes, what do you see in me eyes? Baby, I'm so lazy, I'm so lazy. Cause every day you're changing, you better stop your ways. Baby, I'm so crazy, I'm so crazy. Mkwatako, hanokoze nyambako. Kulunoze firako, kabibebe zebonyome zako. Mkwatako, biebie sutako. Togenda kumako, lero tovako. Tell me what you want today. Kumao tutule. In a room and you to taste it. No one go on every time you say. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. Tell me what to say, yeah, baby. When me open me eyes, what do you see in me eyes? Baby, I'm so lazy, I'm so lazy. Cause every day you're changing, you better stop your ways. Baby, I'm so crazy, I'm so crazy. Mkwatako, hanokoze nyambako. Kulunoze firako, kabibebe zebonyome zako. Mkwatako, biebie sutako. Togenda kumako, lero tovako. Hold me, make me feel better, better. When me talk to ya, oh, weta, weta. Jukirega, febyali, biambeta. To weta, weta, weta. Hold me, make me feel better, better. When me talk to you, oh, weta, weta. Joke it, baby, I'll leave you better. Make it your weta, weta. When me open me eyes, what do you see in me eyes? Baby, I'm so lazy, I'm so lazy. Cause every day you're changing, you better stop your ways. Baby, I'm so crazy, I'm so crazy. Mkwatako, hanokoze nyambako. Kulunoze firako, kabibebe zebonyome zako. Mkwatako, biebie sutako. togenda kumako lero tovako nkwatako anokoze nyambako kolonoze firako.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Odette Fraser, and our engineer for today, Al Santos, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, do not look down on an idea. It may be the best one in achieving your goal. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The most urgent and dangerous threat to peace and security in the Asia-Pacific is North Korea, said U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis. Speaking in Singapore, he noted the North Korean regime has increased the pace and the scope of its nuclear program in recent months. North Korea's nuclear program is a threat to all. Coupled with reckless proclamations, the current North Korean program signals a clear intent to acquire nuclear-armed ballistic missiles, said Secretary Mattis, including those of intercontinental range that pose direct and immediate threats to our regional allies, our partners, and all the world. There is a strong international consensus that the current situation cannot continue. The U.S. is encouraged by China's renewed commitment to work with the international community toward denuclearization. Ultimately, said Secretary Mattis, we believe China will come to recognize North Korea as a strategic liability, not an asset. As China's President Xi said in April, only if all sides live up to their responsibilities and come together from different directions can the nuclear issues on the peninsula be resolved as quickly as possible. I agree with the President's words on this point, and those words must be followed by actions by all of us, said Secretary Mattis. The United States is coordinating at the United Nations and with its allies and partners to apply new pressure on North Korea to choose to abandon its dangerous path. As Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said before the United Nations in April, the goal is to get North Korea to finally and permanently abandon its nuclear and ballistic missiles programs. The United States will maintain its close cooperation with the Republic of Korea and Japan. Our commitment to the defense of the Republic of Korea and Japan, to include the employment of our most advanced capabilities, is ironclad, said Secretary Mattis. Moreover, the U.S. will take further steps to protect the U.S. homeland, as demonstrated by the recent successful ballistic missile defense test. As Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has made clear, the era of strategic patience is over.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.